This podcast was first broadcast on Mix 92.6. Go to mix92.6.com to find more Environment Matters podcasts. And if you enjoy what we do, to find out how you can support the station, which is run entirely by volunteers. I hope you enjoy the podcast. Welcome to Environment Matters with me, Amanda Yorworth. Environment Matters is the show that brings you news on issues of sustainability and the environment from around Hertfordshire and from further afield. Now, the St Albans Sustainability Festival Expo, which is taking place in the St Albans Arena over the weekend of the 8th and 9th of June, will feature events headed up by some leading thinkers in the sustainability field, and none more so than Rupert Read. He's Emeritus Professor of Philosophy at the University of East Anglia and a co-director of the Climate Majority Project. Now, I thought that you'd like a taster of what Rupert will be talking about in his talk at the Expo on the 9th of June. Rupert caught up with me whilst on a train, and I started by asking him to explain what the Climate Majority Project is and why he thinks that it's key to addressing climate change.
Yeah, so our essential idea in the Climate Majority Project is to bring people together across, well, wide swathes of the population. You know, the clue's in the name. There is a climate majority. There is a majority of people who are already concerned. But the vast majority of those people are not activated. They're not activists. Many of them are looking to find what they can do to fit in with a broader effort, which could actually be enough to alter our trajectory. So what we try to do is to appeal well outside the usual suspects, and to mobilize people to start to take action in effective ways together, wherever they have potential power or voice or agency, be that in your local community or perhaps in your church or in your profession or workplace. And it's going to take all of us, it's going to take a huge, wide, depolarized, distributed effort if we're actually going to get through this. We have to go way beyond the limitations that the climate movement has been subject to so far.
Okay. So from what you're saying there, it sounds like you think that we need to be taking bottom-up action, individual action. Is that alone going to be enough to give us the changes that we need to bring our greenhouse gas emissions down to a safe level?
Well, I'd say you're right to detect an important emphasis in what we propose on bottom-up action. But the implication in your question that this action can be just individual, we wouldn't agree with. The vast majority of what is needed is collective action of one kind or another. It's about people organizing in their institutions. It's about bringing themselves together to form forms of agency and collectives and groups which can actually exert sufficient pressure to change things. I think that everybody knows that although it may be a nice thing and a good thing for people as individuals to say, eat less meat or fly less or whatever, this is in no way going to add up to the changes that we need. Ultimately, the change has to be a political one. But to get to that, we have to change the political culture of this country. And that means we need to lead from the bottom in our groups, whatever those powerful, potentially powerful groups may be. And yeah, so in sum, individual action is not going to cut it. If you want to actually get serious on making a livable future, you'll be working together with other people who are in their huge numbers feeling the same way.
The words community resilience are some that keep coming up. Why is this so important?
So the bottom line as to why community resilience is ever more important is that, well, we're in serious trouble. And I think more people realize that. I will suggest that more and more people realize it. And people are just realizing now that more and more people realize it. In other words, there is collective awareness growing of the trouble and of the fact that if we wait around for our leaders to fix it, we're going to be waiting too long. We're not being kept safe. And we need to move now on things like water storage, local food resilience, disaster preparedness. And to the extent that we do, we'll be safer. And that, therefore, is an intelligent and practical thing that we can start to do. It's challenging, including psychologically challenging, but it's also quite empowering once you make the move to start doing it, as more and more local communities are doing. I was in Ilkley in Yorkshire, for example, recently. Very successful local community climate group they've got there. But I was saying to them, look, this is great, the things you're doing, like a library of things and the stuff you've been doing on changing commuting patterns and so on. All very good. But now I think the next stage is adaptation, resilience building, preparedness in the community. For example, there, one thing which is really important is looking at wildfires and the danger of those pose on the moors, and the danger increases all the time. It'll be different in every community, but every community can find ways of making itself safer. And that is a fundamentally important and possible thing to do. And that is a key part of the action that the Climate Majority Project is encouraging.
Okay. So one of the things that the Climate Majority Project is doing is helping some of the kind of projects that you've been talking about using the Climate Majority Incubator. Can you tell us what that is, please?
Yeah, so from the beginning, we decided one of the things we wanted to do was support really promising organizations in the space. This is not going to be something where one organization solves or fixes it or even leads the whole thing. What we try to do in the Climate Majority Project is, among other things, to spot these really promising projects and organizations and support them. And that's the idea of the incubator. And sometimes we're able to do that with money. Sometimes we do it with consultancy, publicity, networking, etc. We are at the present time engaged in incubating 6 organizations. And some of those will be represented alongside me at the St. Albans Sustfest, which is very exciting. It'll be great to have them, all of us in the same room. And yeah, we think this is really, really important. It's a way of symbolizing that this is something which we need to do together in a joined up way and in a distributed way. It's going to take all of us doing all sorts of different things. And these organizations that we're incubating, like MP Watch or Community Climate Action, they are among the leaders in their field, if you will, which is a growing and crucial field.
My thanks to Rupert. Now, he spoke there about the Climate Majority Incubator. After his talk at the Sustfest Expo, Rupert will be taking part in a panel discussion and will be joined by 3 people whose organisations have benefited from the Climate Majority Incubator. Let's hear a bit from them. First, from Jack Cooper, a 23-year-old student and founder of the Postcode Revolution. He was previously involved in climate protest through disruptive stunts, and I wondered why he had moved away from that sort of action.
I used to be a radical climate activist and had a fairly radical theory of change. But when I encountered the Climate Majority Project and ways of acting that could truly appeal to a wide audience of people, from people across the political spectrum, I saw the value in that. And that inspired me to start acting locally where I was in my postcode.
So do you think there's still a place for people doing that kind of stunt, or would you rather they didn't? Do you think that's estranging people?
I think that there still is definitely a place for radical action, but ultimately there are many people who don't feel ready or comfortable to do radical action. And so therefore having things that they can do is also really essential.
So let's talk about your project, the Postcode Revolution. Can you talk us through what that involves?
So the Postcode Revolution is a hyper-local form of citizen climate action with an emphasis on community first. Postcode Revolution encourages people to become postcode leads in their area, to talk to their neighbours, form WhatsApp group chats, and form a sense of community and belonging in their neighbourhood. In my hometown of Burgess Hill, I didn't know my neighbours growing up. And last summer, I was inspired to change this and to act and to organise community. Within this, we formed a climate and energy group, organising energy performance certificates for our community. And there was an increased amount of sharing of food and produce. And we had various different events. Postcode Revolution take as a theory of change, which involves placing community and belonging at the core. And through this, through knowing your neighbours, we see the benefits of greater sharing, more circular economics, less high energy forms of living. And really, this can happen everywhere.
And if people wanted to get started with this, they'd obviously have to start talking to their neighbours about climate change. And that's something that I know that people feel a little bit reticent about, a bit nervous about. Can you just give us a quick tip for getting that conversation started?
My tip is don't talk about climate change. In Postcode Revolution, as I say, we've got a community first approach. So at the core is having this local community in your postcode. In the Postcode Revolution, the climate impacts come from that basis of community, localism, belonging, from a lower energy form of living, from that sharing, and from being able to have those conversations with people that you previously didn't know. So that basis of community comes first, and then the conversations about climate, then they can come after that.
Indeed. Now, Jules Thompson, you're someone else who believes in the power of bringing communities together, and you're the driving force behind a number of innovative projects like the Community Climate Action Project. So it looks like we're in a pretty hopeless situation here as far as the climate goes. Scientists are telling us that they think that the 1.5 degrees increase in temperature might well have already been breached, and it looks like emissions are still going up. Can you just tell us why you think we should still have hope?
In answer to that question, I'll probably tell an anecdote. In one of our community climate action workshops, which is making a plan for our community to decarbonize and increase biodiversity in the next 10 years, a very committed environmentalist said, I love what you're doing, Jules, but it won't make a bit of difference. And then another colleague said, I'm going to go down fighting and have all the fun while I do it. So I'm in that second boat. You know, we've still got to experience joy in our lives. I think we can act, and I think we can do something about it. So I have faith. I have faith in humanity.
So can you tell us a bit about Community Climate Action and what it's doing?
Yeah, absolutely. Very much like Jack said, bringing communities together, building community is incredibly important if we're going to face this polycrisis and in particular the climate and ecological emergency. We've also got a community benefit society called iFarm, which has 10 acres of land and a pub, and that's kind of our hub of activity and is essentially a climate emergency centre. And what greater place to have a conversation about climate than over a pint? And again, we probably don't lead on climate. We lead on, well, you know, hasn't it been wet? You know, we lead on keeping people warm, looking after people, keeping them cool in the summer. So building community is really important. But in particular, the UN have declared code red for humanity. And I'll just pause there a moment to let that sink in. The UN has declared code red for humanity. So we need a plan. And councils and local authorities realise they can't pass laws and they have very little budget and they can't do it without us. So we'll take all of us and we'll take everything. So we all have to act in concert. So Community Climate Action is a participatory process of workshops to bring the community together, to write and then enact our community plan to build resilience and adapt to the changes that are here.
Okay. And can you tell us a bit about your great collaboration project? Because that's more to do with getting councils working together, isn't it?
Not particularly with the focus on councils, but we obviously need to work in conjunction with our councils, really from grassroots ground up, from parish council level. So I've joined my parish council, for instance, and we're working in support of district and county policy. So what's not to like? We're lucky enough to have a county that has a net zero aspiration for the whole county of 2030. That's world beating. Now, we want to take action to support that. So the Great Collaboration, and you can visit it at greatcollaboration.uk, is a toolkit for council and community climate action. So it's really about how we act collectively. Jack mentioned EPCs. Once we've discovered what our EPCs are in our neighbourhood, let's go about retrofitting. You know, let's go and insulate Britain because they were right. But I'm not going to glue my hands to the road. I'm going to go and insulate homes. So it's about how we come together as a community to build that resilience and install things like community-owned renewable energy. And it's much better to do that with the support and the help of our representative politicians.
And talking about representative politicians, Jessica Townsend, you were a founding member of the group MP Watch. Is that a political organisation?
It's political in that we use the political life of the nation and structures in order to try and get mostly the net zero message across, but nature is in dire straits as well. We're non-politically partisan. So what we do is we say to people, would you place your life in the hands of your MP? Would you be happy to place your children's futures and well-being in the hands of your MP? Well, isn't that just exactly what we're doing in these times? And if the answer is no, which it almost certainly is, so we need to engage with politicians and to say, this is incredibly important to us and we need you to actually represent us, to act on our behalves, whether you're Conservative, Labour, SNP, whoever you are.
So Jessica, what you're doing at MP Watch is looking for top-down action. Do you think that that is just one part of the sustainability jigsaw, or do you think that that could bring along change by itself?
By using the power of constituents, we're pressurising MPs of whatever colour, whatever party, to act. MP Watch doesn't really think that we're going to put pressure on our MPs and that will solve everything. It really doesn't. It feels that we are a piece. We found a lever. We're going to push on that lever. Jules and Jack are doing other work, and that by all of these different people in different areas and dimensions pushing in a similar direction, we're going to get some progress that we need. Or if we're not going to do that, we're going to have communities that are strong enough to act together when we face crises.
My thanks to Jack, Jules and Jessica. And you can hear them in action alongside Rupert Reed at the SustFest Expo on Sunday the 9th of June from 12 noon at the Auburn Arena. And for details of this and the whole weekend of excellent empowering events, go to the events page of sustainablestalbans.org. I'll be with you at the same time next week, but until then, thank you for listening.